If he does not, he is going to damage his own state of future life. Now, I've known a number of persons who, under the pressure of retirement or under the pressure of fatigue, which has been associated with retirement, have done very foolish things. They have decided that they are too tired to do anything. Now, it's true that you can prove to your own satisfaction that a long career of 30 or 40 years in the business world is enough to fatigue anybody. And this particular type of fatigue is very common with school teachers who have had a long career working with difficult children and feel that they have done their duty as far as society is concerned. They want no more of it. But no matter how many years of service the person has given, it's not possible. In fact, it is more difficult because of years of regular service to suddenly discontinue such activities. The individual must not, under any condition, draw a line and say, my active life ends here. This is especially true where the active life is still in good shape and really is only lacking incentives. Much fatigue is plain boredom, and there's no form of boredom that is worse than being bored with yourself. And the individual who is otherwise in good health, able to do what he pleases, and very often does, in some fields at least, have his own actual activities, the idea that the person is too tired or too old or too infirm to go on and do things is more or less ridiculous. Actually, the more bored we become, the less we want to do. And the more we do, the less bored we are. So if the fatigue is not traceable to a distinct and definite ailment, it should not be given much consideration. And if there is an ailment, every effort should be made to correct that. And in that way, rescue the life from this pseudo-fatigue mechanism. The person must realize that perhaps retirement or gradually verging towards independence is a penalty. It is not. It is an opportunity for the individual to perform a variety of personal accomplishments which have been relatively impossible in the past. So what we are going to do now with this problem that retirement is imminent, that the person has now reached that period in life in which his children are on their own, his business responsibilities are largely over, and the problem of facing futures becomes significant. What kind of futures do we face? The average person who retires today has very good probabilities of at least 15 years of useful life, often more. And it's not unusual to find an individual active and busy and doing things 25 years after retirement. With this type of situation, we really have a time for a complete career. We have time for the individual to build a new life and have an opportunity to fulfill this life in many respects and to have the successes perhaps in this life that never came to them in the long years of their routine existence. I know a number of individuals who have won international awards, who have become leaders in the arts, crafts, and philosophies and sciences, who have been highly rewarded and have been recognized long after the retirement from their ordinary jobs. They had the opportunities to then develop and accomplish a completely new career. It is also noticeable that sometimes the individual retiring goes for 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a state of doldrums. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He is bored. He is wasting time. He is devoting the precious time, which is our human allotment, to useless, meaningless pursuits. He's just sitting around in a state of semi-coma, not doing or pressing any purpose that is worthwhile. After a while, however, one of two things happens. Either this attitude runs the person down to the point where they can't do anything, or it wakes them up to the point where they become absolutely irritated with themselves. They decide the time has come to stand up and do something. These people then begin to develop faculties, powers, and attributes that are important. The moment an individual feels his life to be important, he begins to take more interest in his own health. And the individual who is simply waiting to fade out doesn't pay much attention to his health. He doesn't care. But when he knows that there is something he wants to do and that health can interfere if he is not well, he then begins to take care of himself. He makes corrections in his own way of life. He improves his diet. He develops certain attitudes that are constructive. And most of all, he gets a new mental point of view. It is a very great mistake that many people do make, and that is to start by dying first in the mind. Not that they become feeble, but they become purposeless. They do not use the mind as a leader of the life. They simply drift along, allowing things to happen. When they get a little angry with the fact that things do not happen, or nothing much is accomplished, then they start in taking on new activities, new projects, new dimensions of experience. Very often, this type of thing can lead to new jobs, part-time employment, which may be all they need. But it also gives an opportunity for the development of a non-commercial career. If the person has a pension, has retirement funds, or has at least a considerable part of their future protected, so that only minor other needs are essential, then the person can live no longer to make a living, but to build a life. No longer considering, first of all, economics, but considering, first of all, the fulfillment of those characteristics of the person which have been blocked by economics for the larger part of their business career. The woman of the family has no longer the problem of her children. She is now a person with greater freedom and has the opportunity of going on in education. I attended a commencement, one of our colleges, not so very many years ago, in which a man and his grandson graduated in the same class. The desire for learning had always been there. I know another case where a man got his medical degree when he was 78 years old and practiced for 10 years and was very happy about the whole thing. It's to get behind ourselves with some kind of a project that really takes care of most of the problems. And those who do develop projects nearly always live to complete those projects, or that is, to achieve a degree of success in them that satisfies the life. To have something special to do seems to lengthen life. It seems also to give greater satisfaction to life. And it undoubtedly accomplishes this, at least in part, by improving the disposition. An individual's disposition goes to weed is nearly always subject to more ailments than those who have a constructive mental attitude. One of the best of all constructive mental attitudes is to forget yourself entirely by doing something that is more important than yourself. The individual who is living only to satisfy himself has much more danger of infirmity than the person who says, "I haven't time to think about myself. The job must be done." And many cases, individuals who have been considered in the last stages of terminal illness have survived 1, 2, 3, or 4 years longer than it was believed to be possible, simply because they had to finish the job before they could go. And this is the best way to go when the time comes, is to be there working at the job. In our field of activity, working at the job has many interesting possibilities. It is true that we must, to a measure at least, live with ourselves And there is a grave probability that when we leave here, we still live with ourselves, which is one of the things we have to give a little attention to. Most people who have been able to make better adjustments with life have accepted the immortality of the human soul. They have realized firmly and deeply that this life is not the end of their existence. And the belief that consciousness, intelligence, and individuality survive the grave, this belief has a tremendous moral effect upon people. If you can really make that stick inside yourself, if you can really maintain the solid conviction that the journey is not terminated here, and that the things that we learn here, the lessons that we achieve here, all of them are part of a continuing program of self-culture, that we are always in a program of continuing to learn, continuing to grow. This helps a tremendous amount because it takes away forever the termination of anything. It takes away from us the feeling that our little life is truly rounded by a sleep. We know, if we think a minute about the universe and its development and its progress, that it is inconceivable that any plan by means of which this vast cosmic system could come into existence with all its creatures and all its creations, that such a plan could end in oblivion, that the power that fashions this particular universe to which we belong has it as its final termination to put all these chessmen back in the box and close it. This type of thinking is very bad for people who want to have good older years. It is much more important for the person to look forward to the fact that life is forever changing, but that life is eternal. Under those conditions, people can start projects without even worrying about whether to finish them or not. It's very possible that someone who takes up wood carving at 60 or 65 is not going to be able to become an El Greco. But he can start. I had an old friend who started learning Spanish when he was in his 70s. He said he didn't think he'd live to learn it very well, but it would help him next time. So whatever it is the looking forward that does the trick. It is the looking forward that ends forever this note of pessimism. It also ends for every individual the fear of change, the fear of the fact that all he has will be spent by his relatives after he's gone, or that perhaps his immortality will consist of being able to sit on the side of the coffin and watch them spend it, which would be a very sad experience. But this is only natural to a person who overvalued it in the first place. He should have known before he began that he couldn't keep it. He should have used what he could as wisely as he could, but never believed that the bank account was going to be of any permanent value beyond the amount it helped him to grow or helped him to help other people. These thoughts become basic. But with a future that goes on, there is every reason to keep on trying just as long as possible. A person may live to 65 years with a very bad disposition, an incurable temper, and a very unpleasant lack of social adjustment. If, however, at 65 he begins to reform, if he changes his ways, if he becomes more thoughtful and controls himself, he'll be getting a start for a better disposition in the future. And it is a strange thing that very often repentances accompany age. The individual who was really worthless in his life repents in his closing hours and perhaps receives the blessings of his faith before he departs. But this repentance may have some value. He repented only because he's afraid. He repented only because he'd probably had too long a time in his illness to remember his own mistakes. He may have repented because he wasn't sure that his previous materialism or sophistication was going to be much further use to him. But in repentance, whatever it may be, if it is a sincere recognition of a mistake and a really sincere and devout determination to one way or another correct this condition if possibility exists, it may mean that he carries forward into the future a resolution to live better than he did while he was here. In fact, the repentance may be the proof that he has recognized his own mistake. So, taking away from the individual the termination of his own experiences, taking away from him the idea that all that he has tried to do, all he has tried to be, is going to be forgotten, that he is going never to know again that he even exists. This type of philosophy is socially a tragedy. Materialism is not only a detriment to the individual, but the most positive detriment to human society. The nation, the individual, the race, the culture that does not believe in the ideals and principles and integrities of endurance and going on and improving, this type of society will breed nothing but anarchy and despair. So the person, for his own good and society, must be built upon a foundation of dedicated integrities, dedicated to the improvement of self and the improvement of the community and the world at large. Now, it so sometimes happens that older people must make decisions about their lives. And these decisions, of course, differ very largely with circumstances. But all things being equal, the better disposition the older person had in his younger years, the more comfort and happiness he's going to find in the decisions he must later make. Some of the most important decisions involve helping other people. It is simply a tragedy that older people are not useful in the very environments where they have lived, where they are actually of great value to their families and to the communities in which they exist. I know several families in which the elders are the strongest, most positive, and productive members of the family, that they are the ones that are holding the whole thing together. They have the solid values, and when emergencies arise, the younger people turn to them as the rocks of ages, something they can depend on. They may, in their younger years, these younger people, may have very little thought for this problem. But as they get a little older themselves and begin to recognize the responsibilities of living, a good relationship between themselves and their older relatives become important. But this is frustrated if the older person is impossible. And this is what happens when they do nothing to make themselves possible. Some cantankerous elder can be a danger and a detriment to any family. But a dedicated one who loves their children or loves their grandchildren and finds joy and fulfillment in service can have a wonderful life. It all depends upon the person. Then there are some who have looked forward for all their years to being alone. They wanted to be by themselves. Well, this isn't as successful a pattern as might be suspected either, because when you live only by yourself, you have no one to live with but yourself, and it is often a very serious disaster. The people who cannot get along with others can seldom get along with themselves. They therefore become subject to all kinds of neurotic tendencies. They become more and more antisocial. They become more difficult to live with, and even in a retirement community, they are a menace. Nothing works well if the individual does not want to be a part of his world and continue to serve it as long as he possibly can. So by making certain changes in your own way of life as you go along, you can make a very major improvement in the important years, which should be the best years of your life. Actually, the idea of heaven is more or less a place in which you have an opportunity to enjoy the rewards of a good life, whether you are protected against the dangers that beset the worldly, and where all people go on blissfully together to eternity. Well, there is a short prologue to heaven in the older years of each person if he wants to do something about it. He can begin to have this peace of mind, peace of soul. He can have the rewards of labor. He can have the joy and happiness and friendship and affection of those whom he has served. And he can settle down to a long period that perhaps will be more successful in heaven, and maybe the only heaven he's going to have anyway. But regardless of this, he can do something important with it. It all depends upon getting started and making something of it. Now, if the person reaches retirement with none of these adjustments, the shock may produce some very valuable changes. He may gradually discover that the things that he thought he was going to want to do have no real interest for him. He may discover that all this leisure is really killing him, that he simply cannot fritter away 20 years doing nothing that means anything to himself or anybody else just because he thinks he's tired. The more time he wastes, the more tired he will be. And gradually he will make himself into a non-productive creature. He will finally exhaust all interest in everything. When these points of retirement come, then, it's very important for the individual to make plans to make the future valuable to himself. And the only way he can do this is to get his mind more and more off of himself. As long as he says, I want to be happy, I want to do this, I must have that, he is going to remain a little miserable. Because actually, happiness is a byproduct. No one has ever succeeded in making themselves happy by a frontal effort. Happiness is a byproduct of service. It is a byproduct of dedication. It is a byproduct of self-forgetfulness in the service of something more important. Happiness comes to those who serve, not to those who search for happiness directly. Happiness does not come from security of the material things. It comes from a security within the self in which we live in a relationship of peace with our own inner lives. Without this type of happiness, the rest of the pattern is very ineffective. So we know that the happiness can be ours. And I know people that go out every day and try to find out ways in which they can be of service to other people. I've known a number of very brilliant musicians who, after they retired from public career, simply went into religious charity. They accepted impoverished pupils who could not pay for lessons and gave them their time and effort and trained them in music. Music was what the person loved. Therefore, he shared it with those who otherwise couldn't have it. The one man I know who did that would certainly have been able to charge $100 a lesson because he was a world-famous violinist. Instead of that, he charged nothing. In many cases, bought cheap violins for his young pupils so they'd have something to play on. Another person who did this in very definite situations, did a great deal for this, was Kreisler, the violinist. All these people found ways to do things to help. And Kreisler, on one occasion, listened to a little boy in the one of the ghettos of New York, who was trying to play the violin and was doing a terrible job of it. And Kreisler sat there smiling and beaming and encouraging. And a friend said to him afterwards, he said, how did you do it? How could a man with your trained ear in music actually endure this particular program? Oh, he said it was very easy. I just remembered my own beginnings. And the rest was very simple. And this is the way a great many people have found outlets for service. The problem of care of children is becoming increasingly difficult now that in many families both parents are employed. Plans and programs to work out protection for children can become an important factor among elder people. Group planning for a group guardianship of children while parents are working can be a very important and constructive contribution to society today. There are many, many ways in which the person looking for something to do can find things that are valuable. But the person who is looking carefully to avoid anything to do will never find any really useful activity. I know that with the present economic situation, where a great many charities, a great many national projects and welfare projects are apt to be curtailed, that there will be still greater opportunity for voluntary service in many fields which must otherwise be neglected. Here, people who have training, who have dedication, can find the golden opportunities to keep on with the thing that they know best, that is work. Anyone really worthwhile knows work probably better than any other activity in life. And a good life and a long life depends on keeping on with the work. The world's work must be done. Younger people are not adequate. Younger people do not know what is necessary. But those who are now able to do these things have a tendency to retire annoyed and disillusioned. The time has come to try to put these things together again and make a pattern that is real and valuable. The dignity of the older person has long been established in most countries. But in this country, and in much of Europe, and much of the world today, for that matter, youth has taken over. Youth has tried desperately to create the changes that are probably, many of them, very sorely needed. But youth has not the experience, it has not the value sense to make these things possible. Therefore, a strong companionship or comradeship between the strength and enthusiasm of youth and the prudence and wisdom of age. From this combination, permanent improvement must develop. It cannot be done by a group that has not experienced the values and the needed things. And yet, for so many, the barrier between age and youth is partly, at least, responsible for a slowing down of our cultural life. Many older people simply are not interested in continuing to fight for the things they believe. They are disillusioned also. And if the disillusioned youth mingle with the disillusioned elders, there is very little good going to be accomplished. It's time for somebody to break that vicious circle. And the individual who is despondent, critical, and fault-finding will do well to reconsider. Actually, every day the world receives a new shock of some kind. And older people, watching their televisions or listening to their radios or reading their newspapers, become more and more disillusioned about the world in which they live. Most people who have looked forward from childhood to a better world for their children or for those who come after now question very seriously whether this better world is imminent as they might wish it to be. No time now for older people to be disillusioned. What we now generally accept as disillusionment should be a challenge. It should point out the more and more urgent need for the values that maturity can bestow. And older people are coming forward very, very rapidly and are becoming much more important in our world affairs, because they alone represent the living wisdom of a people. Among the Iroquois tribes of American Indians, the older ones were the keepers of the orenda. The orenda was the wisdom, the intangible integrities, which are the foundation of survival. The elders were the ones who were the keepers of the records, who had the stories of the old ones and the true ones, who had the wisdom of the tribe, who had lived long, traveled far. And the young came to them and were blessed with the wisdom. They were given the sacred message of the people. The orenda was taught to the young. It was taught in the form of the hero legends, of the warriors who had given all and their lives and everything to take care of their tribe, who had gone out and fought and died to save their women and children. These were the legends. These were what the young people were told. They were also told of the gods who helped them and protected them, and who gave them healing and gave them wisdom. And they were taught the secrets of government. And the government was the long house. And the government was on the white robe of the peace. And the government was the wisdom of the ages. And the temple of the wigwam, or the great council hall, was a replica of the great council hall in the sky up above, where the olds and the trues and the elders guided forever. And everything was according to great laws and great principles. And government was an integrity. And the young were taught these things. They were taught kindness and thoughtfulness and consideration. The young were taught that when they went out to hunt, they had no right to eat until the women and children were fed first. And if anyone had to go hungry, it was the mature man. These things were honor. Without this, there was no code. Also, in government, it was interesting. We talk now about matriarchal principles in connection with life. The Great League of the Nations, which later inspired Wilson's League of Nations, was controlled by women. The women were never the senators that attended, but they were the electors of them. And every man who represented the people was elected by a woman. This was a very interesting thing. And it also meant that when they all sat in judgment or in law, it was the law of the Iroquois that no representative could cast a vote for his own party. He was never permitted to participate in an election involving the tribe he represented. He must remain silent. Others must do this. When a matter was important, the one who was important, or thought it was important, opened the door. He told the story of what he wanted or what he thought was important. When he was finished, he sat down. Then the others all spoke, and none could contradict one another. No one could abuse, no one could downgrade, no one could accuse anyone of anything. Everything had to be done in peace. There was to be no competition. Only consideration was the good of all. And these were the wisdoms of the olds, the wisdom of the trues, the spirits who had gone before. And they were the basis of the moral code of the young, who were taught these things. And the reason they could be taught, and here is the rub, the reason they could be taught is because the tribe had always lived them. It wasn't telling your son to be good after you had lived a desolate life. It was that you were to go on in the way of the past, of honor, integrity, well-being, honesty, virtue, unselfishness. These were the rules of the time. Now today, these rules are largely in the keeping of the older generation. The younger generation is not trying to keep the rules. They want to make new rules. Some of them will be good. We do not deny this. But the wisdom of the old is lost in our way of life. It is lost because we have not demanded recognition for it. It is lost because the elders themselves have forgotten the way. and they must find it again if they want to bring our world and our people into better perspective. Those who have retired from the struggle of life, those who are no longer forced a toady to some adamant employer, those who have the freedom to live their lives and think their thoughts, dream their dreams, the olds who we call the elders, they are the ones who are free to make these decisions. They have nothing to lose, everything to gain. They are not forced to agree with what they do not believe. They do not have to vote for what they do not consider right. It is a matter where the older person, with perspective, freedom, and independence, can have a tremendous influence if his own life justifies it. But this is the thing that counts. And this is the reason why it is important for us all to prepare for these advancing years with a firm determination that when they come, we're going to use them for the common good. We're not going to sit back and rot out because we think we're tired. If we think we're tired long enough, we're going to be really tired. But instead of that, we're going to stay with it as long as life remains, and what we can't do here, we will carry into the future when the proper moment arises. And in the course of time, all good things that we have come into this world to learn and through which we grow and become better will be achieved in society. And the young and the old and the strong and the weak will all combine to make this a better place to live. And if we can work on that basis, we can do a lot with the years that we have, even though a few that went before have been wasted. We don't have to keep on wasting. So let every one of us, no matter of their age, young or old, roll up their sleeves and go to it. Thank you very much.